If narcissists are such broken people, then why would any of us choose to get into a relationship with one? Well, what we don't realize is we didn't really meet a real person. We met a mask, something that's created at the moment of meeting that is an illusion that you've met somebody just like yourself. In this replay of a TikTok Live, we're going to talk about this as well as other things related to narcissism and narcissistic abuse. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a clinical mental health specialist who's also a narcissistic abuse survivor. I'm thrilled that you're here joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so that you're notified of upcoming episodes and leave a review and let us know how we're doing. As podcast listeners supported, we appreciate your donations. Consider giving the cost of a cup of coffee to help support us. So let's tune in and listen to this replay of a TikTok Live. I've lately been just immersed in the latest research of narcissistic abuse. And I've been listening lately to Sandra Brown. I don't know if you've heard of her. She wrote the book Psychopaths and the Women Who Love Them or something like that. It was a fascinating book, bestseller, came out several years ago. And she and a group of her colleagues did this big, large research through Purdue University where they looked at 600 pathological love relationships. Now, I'm going to talk gender specific because her study was gender specific. It was looking at women who got into a relationship with pathological men, mostly psychopaths, narcissistic sociopaths, and narcissists. And she looked at these 600 relationships and began to identify patterns within them. And one of the things that she noticed was the creation of a mask, which is what we talk about a lot, about how during the love bombing phase, during the idealization phase, you believe you've met somebody who is very similar to you. In fact, probably more similar to you than you've ever met in your life. If you really hone in on your mental fantasies, on when you imagine meeting the partner that you wish you could meet, chances are you're actually describing either a masculine version of you or a feminine version of you, depending on your gender orientation and your sexual orientation. You'll create a match that really is very similar to you, likes things that you like, wants to spend time the way you want to spend time, has hobbies and interests that really mimic or mirror your own. That's normal. We wish to find someone that's very compatible to us. And it's a struggle. The more unlike we are to our partner, the more we have to sort of find things that will connect us, because we need these connecting things to build a bridge for intimacy. So these predators, and that's what she really sees them at, these predators are aware of this innate need in us. And they then hone themselves. They in the moment, this is the part that I found shocking. In the moment, they recreate themselves to mimic you. There's been theories in psychology about what is the narcissist core. When we talk about core, what we're meaning is when you are with yourself alone, what fills this inner space of you? What makes you, you? And each of us, our cores look a little different depending on our emotional development, depending on how we're raised, depending upon our culture. Lots of things will shape our core. But when you're more immature, in other words, when you're not, your sense of self is not well defined, what does that inner core look like? And unfortunately, it's theorized that it's rather blank or empty, that is not a lot of, there's not a lot of definition. They've not really fully formed themselves into someone distinct with lots of presence, lots of uniqueness. And as a result, when they meet you, they shape themselves into, they morph into a version of you. Now, that serves two purposes. One, it solves the dilemma of who are they, because that is one of our existential questions that causes angst. We need to know who we are. If you actually don't have a good answer for that, that's going to cause you distress. So it solves that problem for them. They become someone. They become like you. But it also solves a secondary problem, which is it connects you to them. It creates this instantaneous bond between you and them so that you think you met someone like you. I remember sitting with my ex. I was married twice. My first marriage was 31 years, and he passed away of cancer. And I met the second guy, who is a narcissistic sociopath. And I remember at that first date thinking, wow, this guy really checks a lot of the box. You know, I wanted something like this, and I wanted something like this, and I wanted something like this. And I was stunned how many boxes this person checked, because he in that moment presented himself to match me, same stage of life, same sort of ethical, spiritual view of the world. He had a similar political leanings. He was kind of similar professional job and looking to spend the rest of his life as he moves towards retirement in a similar way. And all of these things were like, check, 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 check for me. So I felt like I met this incredible compatible person, which is their goal. Their goal, it's a predatory goal. Their goal is they want to connect with you as fast as possible because they see you as a resource. One of the other things she found, which was really, really fascinating to me, was she found that this is a predatory relationship and that they didn't pick you randomly. In fact, there are a couple types of targets she identified. She identified the opportunistic target, but we're going to ignore that target for a moment. We're not going to talk about that target. And then there is the target, the one that they plan to spend some time with. You were not selected randomly. They, in their head, had this idea of who they wanted to match with. They may have wanted someone that looked really good on their arm. Maybe they really wanted a certain body. I'm going to be kind of crude. Please forgive me for my bluntness. They may have wanted a certain body type or a certain kind of experience in life. Maybe they wanted to live with a certain kind of financial freedom that you seem to bring. Maybe they really loved the influence and power or the world you moved in, and they wanted to move in that world. You notice, for example, I've been watching Inventing Anna. She really wanted to live in a certain kind of a world. So she was picking people who ran in that circle. So there's something about you that they were attracted to, that you ticked the boxes off for them, which is why they then selected you as the individual that they were moving towards. So then they meet you, and they already know because they did this research. In fact, mine actually told me in the first date he had researched me. He said he had been researching widows. Now, I thought, see, this is the problem when we assume we hear what we want to hear. We don't stop and think about the context and the fact that I know. In fact, I get a lot of crap from people for saying I'm too vigilant. I think the worst, but here's the thing. I didn't do this. When I heard that, I thought, oh, he's been looking into what my life might be like. And he's been concerned and wanting to be sensitive to issues that widows particularly face. No, that's not what he meant. What he meant was he wanted to have a certain type of a lifestyle. And he knew that widows, what do we all know about widows? We know that they probably came into their husband's pension or retirement plan. And we also know that some of them have a life insurance policy, right? So that what he was really saying was he was looking for someone with money. That's what he was telling me. I didn't hear it that way. I heard it through my grid as a psychologist. I heard it of, oh, this is a compassionate person. And I totally miss the predatory nature of that revelation. So there is something that you may have heard as well in that first meeting that might have also told you that was predatory. Here's the other thing, and I'm kind of going off on a little divergent, though. Not only will they may reveal or tip their hand on how predatory this is, they also may tip their hand on how very invested or not invested they are and how much intimacy you can expect. Often they kind of do an announcement, and it's interesting why we do this. And by the way, everyone does this. This is a hack. I'm telling you a hack. When you meet someone new, especially when it's a romantic situation, they're going to tell you something as a way to set the tone for the relationship. They want to set the bar on your expectations because they don't want you to overestimate and overexpect something from them. In other words, it's a halt. It's like a governor on a bus. They don't want you exceeding the speed is what they're telling you. So they're going to give you a warning about what to expect in the relationship. And take it seriously. This is the absolute drop-dead point in this relationship. It is serious. He said, this is what he said to me. He said, I don't need anyone. I'm fine all on my own. He was telling me that he was not going to be all in on this relationship. Not ever. Not ever. And I bet you when you entered, you got into your relationship with even healthy people, as well as not healthy people, they've set some tone. They've set some kind of bar of expectation. When you hear that bar of expectation, take it literally. Take it to the bank. You now know what this person's willing to do or not willing to do. Now, it can be not only, hey, I'm not going to be what you want. Don't look for this from me. It might also be the opposite of, I've had guys tell me when I met them on their first date that they're looking for some, that they're retired and they're really looking for someone to hang out with. Okay, FYI, this guy wants a buddy. So really pay attention. Or the other one that recently was interested in me, and just an old friend from high school said that he said that all relationships took compromise. FYI, what he was telling me is he was expecting me to come into this relationship and compromise. And he's not making any, because I just tested him and he didn't make any. But he wants me. I have to now story time. So when my sister was ill in the hospital, I had a lot of time on my hands, and he didn't live very far away. But he was too busy, even though he was retired. He was too busy to see me that week. And then when he heard I was coming back for the funeral, he wanted to know if I could make time to see him. You all know what funerals are like, right? And you know what kind of like emotional like devastation I'm walking into. This is an unexpected death. There are a lot of events that happen within a matter of days, and there are a lot of people coming in from out of town. I'm supposed to find time for him to have coffee when the previous 2 weeks ago, during a week in his retirement, because it was a holiday weekend, he couldn't make time for coffee? No, 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 no. So watch for that. Watch for that. So let's go back to predatory relationships. So they've picked you purposefully. They've picked you because there's some asset, supply. There's some, but it's more than supply. It's more than just that they want admiration and love and sex and all of that. They're actually looking for something that you're going to bring to their life and their lifestyle and to them specifically that's going to benefit them in some way. And that's why they picked you. So they meet you in that first, and they begin to mimic you and mirror and parrot you. And I think that's interesting. We often talk about mirroring, but mimicking, parroting, and mirroring are three different things. So mimicking is to just repeat back. It is like mimicking and parroting to me is very much the same. It's doing something because the other person's doing it, but you don't even necessarily know the meaning of why you're doing it. For example, you can teach a parrot to sing a song. You can teach it to sing classical music, but it won't enjoy the classical music and see the beauty in the music. It's just learned to do that. Like, it's just emptiness. It's learned to do that. Now, mirroring is something different. Mirroring is, if you were in the room with me and you see me tip my head, you tip your head in the same way. If I cross my legs, you cross your legs in the same way to create a circle. If I cross my arms, you cross your arms. You're literally mirroring my body language. And what that does is it creates this sense of rapport and connectedness. So it's mirroring is different, and we can do it emotionally. If they look sad, we can adopt a sad demeanor. If they look happy, we can then adopt a happy demeanor. So parroting is parroting like a parrot, or mimicking is literally repeating something back, you know, echoing it back without having any connection to it, emotional connection. And mirroring is like imitating. It's being literally, you're mirroring their body language and their emotional tone back to them. And all of this creates a sense of symmetry, which makes us feel like we've met our twin, like we've met our soulmate. All of this is done purposefully. Now, is it always bad that someone does it? Because I'll tell you something. If you came into me when I was practicing and seeing clients, I didn't mimic or parrot. I would feel the feelings. I'm a compassionate person with emotions and empathy. So I'm not mimicking. I'm actually experiencing what you're experiencing. But I did mirror, and I did it purposefully because I wanted to build fast rapport so that you would trust me, so that we could get to the deeper stuff faster, is a way to sort of shortcut trust. And I was aware I was doing it. Was it manipulation? Sure. Yeah, I was using it as an advantage to help develop the relationship, but I was doing it as a benefit to you. not as something to hurt you or to take advantage of you. I know salesmen do it too. They do that as a way to make it, to sell you something, a product. Now, we hope salesmen are ethical, that they believe in what they're selling and that they believe it really will improve your life if you had this article in your life. But they also want to make a commission and we're aware of that. What's good about the relationship of a salesman as well as a psychologist or people like me is you go into this relationship knowing that's happening and knowing that there's this influence that's happening on the basis of the relationship. You know you're being trying to be sold something. What's bad about these predatory relationships is you don't know that there's an effort to influence you unduly. You don't know that. You believe that you meet someone who is as insecure, who is trying to vet you just like you're vetting them. You don't know that this is actually you're being set up. That's the big difference between predatory relationships and other type of relationships with an imbalance of power, equity, and influence.
I have to tell you, I am super jazzed about this upcoming event. It is a live webinar with Dr. Kristen Milstead, author of Why Can't I Just Leave? Waking Up and Walking Out of a Pathological Love Relationship. What she's written in this book is amazing. It is the book. If you're struggling to exit, then this is the book that you want to get in order to understand why you're feeling trapped, why it's so hard to get out. And we're going to be doing a live interview with her, along with me and several other panelists. We're going to be talking about what is cognitive dissonance? Why does it cause us to feel so confused and trapped? How is it related to a trauma bond? And how do you break a trauma bond if you're still unsure exactly what happened? Be sure to get your tickets. Space is going to be limited. You can find this in the show notes below. It's going to be on August 18th at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. And again, like I said, I cannot wait for this interview. So I hope to see you there as well.
So that's what happens. That first meeting, all of that happens. And then there's one other dynamic that happens in these first dates or first meetings, and that is they set the emotional tone of which you're going to two things happen. They set two rules for you that you don't even know that's being set. One is they want you to depend on them. So they are looking for you to, they're going to test you to see if they can get you to sway and lean into them. This is how mine did it for me. We went to a beach for the day. We went to a public beach and I had everything packed for a picnic, you know, chairs, blanket, cooler, all the things that you would take to the beach. And we have to carry it now, maybe, I don't know, several hundred feet. And it's in sand. It's not fun. It's kind of, you know, heavy. And I start to kind of pull things out of the trunk and he loads himself up, literally loads himself up with the chairs and the coolers and the backpack. And he's actually hunched. It's so much on him. It looks ridiculous. My arms are free. I go to take something from him. He literally swings it away from me, steps ahead of me and says, well, it's time someone else takes care of you. Now, from the outside, that sounds really nice. Who wouldn't want somebody doing that? Especially when you're like me who grew up on a dairy farm where I've had to carry my weight my whole life, which is why I just had hip replacement. Oh, thank you for that gift. So it was sweet to have someone step up and do this. This was like a gentleman. I really liked it. But it showed up over and over. It wasn't just he was worried about me. What he was establishing the rules that things needed to go his way. He was actually telling me that he's in charge here and I'm to follow and take directions. And you, like I said, it may look really sweet on the outside, but when you see it repetitively come up, that this challenge of who's in control and he's establishing he's in control. Then there's a second thing that happens, and that is they want you to be emotionally responsible for the relationship. They're not responsible for their emotions, and they're not responsible for your emotions. So they begin to set you up to take emotional responsibility, and how they do that is this. They will tell you something. I'm trying to think of a good example. They will tell you something. Kristen Milstead talks about this in her book called Why Can't I Just Leave? And I'm interviewing her August 18th. At 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Guys, you don't want to miss this. Kristen Milstead is actually one of the leading psychologists in the country on cognitive dissonance. This book is the Bible. To me, it's the Bible about why we get stuck in these relationships and why we can't leave. Really need to get a hold of it. It's awesome. You can get it on Amazon. And she's being interviewed by myself. Abuse is Abuse with Bree. Lisa with Stronger Than Before. We also will have the Lindsay Goodman is going to be there interviewing her, as well as Manjeet Rupai. So there's going to be a panel of us interviewing. It's going to be an amazing night. And the last 30 minutes of it, you guys get to ask your questions of Dr. Milstead. So if you have questions about what's got you trapped in this relationship and why can't you get out, it's going to be incredible. It's your responsibility to fix. And you know how all that happens and everything that happens in their life. Like, you know, I found out he'd been cheating 2 months into the relationship and I have feelings about it. And he tells me, well, he's been an addict for a long time and he's doing the best that he can. In other words, my reaction and my feelings are my problem, not his problem. And I just need to get over it. But they do that everywhere. They kind of like pass the buck to you and make you responsible for it. They don't understand why we don't leave. They just say, just leave. Well, it's not that simple if it was that simple, I wouldn't have wrote a book and Dr. Milstead wouldn't be speaking on it. And we wouldn't be having this big discussion about predatory behaviors and setups and groomings. Because here's the thing that the world doesn't understand. When you got pulled into that narcissistically abusive relationship, the tactics used against you were more sophisticated. Please, and I've heard this from multiple sources. I can tell you the sources. The tactics used against you were more sophisticated than pedophiles used to groom children for abuse. Did you hear what I just said? Criminals do this. Criminals who are deliberately targeting and setting someone up to abuse them. The psychological tactics that were used to abuse you, to trap you in that relationship, are more sophisticated. Sandra Brown found that these people are better at it by the age of 30 than pedophiles are. Don Hennessy in Ireland, who works with the Domestic Violence Task Force, said the exact same thing in the book, How He Gets Into Her Head. His book, How He Gets Into Her Head, said the exact same thing. This is predatory behavior. He calls it psychophiles, just like pedophiles. He calls it psychophiles. These individuals are very sophisticated at how to get into our head and do what's called mind mapping. They figure out what we need, what we want, what pushes our buttons, and then they systematically break us down. I'm reading another book called Something's Not Right by Wade Mullen. He says that they need to literally ruin your interior world, break your trust down, get you to betray yourself, get you to put their needs above your needs. All of this is deliberate. This is why people just can't leave. It's not that simple. They've made it. They've pulled you into a web and trapped you. Now, to the rest of the world, they think you're a free agent. You have choice, right? We all have free choice, free will. So just practice that free will. Pack your bags and get the hell out of there, right? But you know why you can't. You know the threats that you're living under, the intimidation, the things they hold over you, they're going to take from you or ruin for you or smear from you. Mine was going to take half of my financial value, stuff I worked my entire life from, stuff that was left from me from my deceased husband's estate, and he's going to drive me back to have to work at a job that I had burnt out. He was literally blackmailing me financially and keeping me in the relationship. Yours is maybe something else. Maybe they're threatening to unalive themselves. Maybe they're threatening to ruin you and take you through court and never stop hounding you. I know of a woman who's years out of this marriage, years out, and her ex still is ruining her life, haunting her, stalking her, chasing her, you know, to the point that she hides online because she can't have a persona because of the terror that this person's doing to them. This is what we're coping with. This is what the public doesn't understand. It's not just simply, well, just pack your bags and get out. No, they've trapped you. They have trapped you. And you didn't even know that was a trap that you were stepping into. I certainly didn't know. I look back now and I'm horrified the things that he did and said and how he did it, making me completely ensnaring me into this deal to where I was literally living in another country without a home or a car or anything in the United States. I was living in a country where I didn't even know the language. Talk about trapped. I was trapped. Yeah, it's not easy to leave. And that's the stuff people really struggle to understand. This is why charm is dangerous, okay? Now, I don't mean like just nice. I'm not talking friendly nice. I'm talking like flattery. If you're getting flattery, so sometimes this is how it looks in the office. They'll come in, sit down, and do narcissists ever come in for therapy? Sure they do. They do it to please those around them that say they need to go in. I mean, they do it not because they want to change. They do it as a tool, as a weapon, you know? So they'll come in and they'll meet me and they'll sit down and they'll say, wow, you're the smartest psychologist I've ever met. This is amazing. I've never had such great advice. Now, of course, there's a part of me like, yes, I know. I am all that great. Okay, but I have learned because of what this was, the warning that I got from this Dr. Pantel warned us new interns this. He said, be careful. If you suddenly feel like you're a shiny nugget of gold, in the next second, you're going to turn into a piece of shit. That's what narcissists do to you. They move you from gold to shit, literally within seconds. So if you guys have ever noticed that, even if, say that you're texting someone new or you're meeting a new friend or whatever it is, and they start to say, wow, you're so amazing. I've never met somebody like you and you're really good at that. That's so great. Watch out for that. That's buttering you up. It's grooming for one. It's flattery and charm. That's what I'm referring to in that video about charm. And they're setting you up so the minute they set you up on a pedestal, you're going to drop. So if you feel like you've been like, ooh, wonderful, it's a warning. It's a warning that this is a toxic person and there's a downside to this. So one of the reasons that you've not been able to leave this relationship, the reason that you're stuck is because you're not for sure who you're really living with. You don't know. And when they tell you something like they're trying really hard, you don't know if you should believe it or not, right? You think it's the truth. You want it to be the truth. I wanted it to be the truth. It's what held me in the relationship. He kept saying he'd never worked so hard. Well, who walks out on a person who's never worked so hard? What I didn't know was it was a lie. That wasn't true. It was just to keep me in the relationship. But I didn't know that. I believed that they meant what they said. I didn't realize this is all a deception. It was, for me, all of a deception. So if you're in a relationship with a narcissistically abusive person, they're deceiving you. And part of what they is they don't want to be different. They don't intend to be different with you. They want you to keep giving them whatever you've been giving them. They want life to stay the same, and they want to keep you fixed, trapped in this relationship. They have no intention of letting you go until they're done. And then when they're done, they'll discard you on their way and their timing. Horrible, right? So because of that, you are being fed all what you need to hear to keep you complacent, to keep you stuck, keep you asleep, make you think that they're trying and that this is important to them when it's really not. It's just important that there's no change. That creates this inner turmoil of agony called cognitive dissonance because you can't figure out what's true. So then you can't make a decision. And cognitive dissonance is the feeling we have when we can't make a decision. So let's think about something else for a second. Let's say this morning that you've decided that you want to eat really healthy, but something is in the house that you really love and you know it's probably you don't need the calories and it's not been good. Maybe even you have an allergy to it. Let's make it even ramp it up, but you love it. It's still in the house. So you look at it and you think, should I or should I not? Should I or should I not? Now, if I do it, then I'm going to pay and I won't hit my goals and, you know, blah, 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 you know. But if I don't, oh, it tastes so good. See, that struggle you have with yourself, that's cognitive dissonance. That's the dissonance. It's the not fitting. It's not fitting. And it creates this mental sense of not fitting. We all have it. It happens all the time in our life. It's a normal thing that happens in life. But it normally goes away once we make the decision. You either will blow it and go ahead and eat it, and then have to deal with the remorse and regret you're going to have about it, or you'll change your behavior and do something new. Now, hopefully, you change your behavior and do something new. Most of the time, we don't. We do whatever is familiar. But it gets resolved because the decision gets made. What happens in these relationships is because it's a deception and you can't make a decision because you don't realize it's a deception, you sit in this place of turmoil and indecisiveness forever, for a long time, for years. Some of you for years. And when that happens, you're sitting in this stress for years, and it has neurological implications. Your brain has been changing because of that chronic stress. They've actually seen it under you know, imaging. They've seen it. Your hippocampus, which is where your memory and also emotional regulation is there, it's shrinking. And your amygdala, which is your fight or flight center that keeps you protected and safe, it's swelling. It's enlarged. So that's why you're extremely vigilant and guarded. You feel touchy and irritable. But you're also forgetful. You're more emotionally erratic. And you feel this cloudy mental fog. It's all real. It's all neurological based and real. Now, here's the part that makes me mad. Why hasn't anyone developed a treatment protocol for this? There is none, by the way, guys. There is no treatment protocol. Nobody knows how to fix this. Why? Well, this is the part that makes me mad, because it's been happening to the people that nobody cares about. Women and children, the weakest links, and minorities even worse. They struggle and suffer even worse. They don't care. So there's not a treatment protocol. Pisses me off. It is right now the most popular research topic in sociology, probably, maybe even psychology. So there's a lot of effort going into looking at how to fix it right now, but we don't have good solutions.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie McAvoy. It was a pleasure to hanging out with you. Have you got your tickets for the live webinar with Dr. Kristen Milstead on August 18th? This is going to be an event you don't want to miss. You're feeling stuck, confused, paralyzed. Maybe you're even wondering why, if the relationship's over, you're still thinking about this person. It's everything related to trauma bonds and the mental confusion that goes along with these types of relationships. Again, it's August 18th, 6:30 p.m. The tickets are $25, but you wait and miss it, then the replays are going to be $30. So don't wait. Get your ticket now and join us on August 18th at 6:30 p.m. for Why Can't I Just Leave? A live webinar with Dr. Kristen Milstead. And I will see you on Monday. Bye-bye.